Should a mother be held accountable for aborting her child? Well, today we're bringing on attorney Bradley Pierce to dive into that question, as he is the author of equal protection legislation across the country, something that's been hotly debated that we're going to dive into today. We have an incredible culture here in the state of Alabama, but our politics and public policy don't reflect the people of Alabama. Media drives culture. Culture is what drives politics and public policy. Welcome, everyone, to 1819 News, the podcast. I'm Brian Dawson, CEO of 1819 News and host of this here podcast, where we are in pursuit of a free and flourishing Alabama every single week. And that is indeed what we are after today. We're having another controversial episode. I guess that's just what we do here. Talking about something that is incredibly important, and it's a discussion in the pro-life movement that many have not thought through or even heard about, but it's a conversation that's growing and getting bigger and bigger, and that's the conversation of personhood and equal protection as it pertains to the life of the unborn. We're bringing on an attorney that works directly in the space that has helped to author much of the legislation that seeks to offer equal protection under the law to children in the womb. Bradley Pierce is an attorney in Texas who also works with Heritage Defense, a law firm that seeks to protect parental rights, specifically of those in the homeschool community. I am a member of Heritage Defense. My family, we are members of Heritage Defense. If you homeschool, I would strongly encourage you to look up Heritage Defense and sign up. It's very cost efficient when you think about the services that they offer. If you end up with child protective services at your door, or any of the things that happen when we live in such a just an absolute crazy time for the realm of parental rights. And the things we're seeing with people going and speaking at school boards, and then they want to take their kids away, and this is happening in states all over. We're in Alabama. That'll never happen here. Okay, well, what about all the stuff that was never going to happen here that keeps on happening now, right? And so it's only a matter of time. It's really a great insurance policy to have if you homeschool, so please check them out, Heritage Defense. Go there, Google it. You'll find them and sign up if you're a homeschooler. But all that being said, Bradley is joining us today to discuss what an Equal Protection Act would actually mean for the state of Alabama. And I'm hoping he's going to dispel some of the common myths and even talk about kind of in this battle royale, if you will, in the pro-life movement that we're seeing. We've seen some really egregious stuff by some of the institutional pro-life organizations and what they're willing to do to keep movement from happening in the equal protection personhood. As things are moving in that direction, they're doing some pretty egregious things that are very not pro-life to stop it. And so we're going to bring Bradley on to talk about that. Really excited to hear from him. But before we do that, I want to talk to you guys about the importance of citizen-supported journalism. 1819 News is your citizen-supported news outlet for the state of Alabama. What does citizen-supported mean? Well, if you guys remember the Elon Musk at the New York Times book deal summit, when they asked him, they said, Elon, what do you say to these sponsors that are nervous about advertising on your platform? He goes, oh, you mean the people who are trying to blackmail me for money so that I'll censor content on Twitter? And he told them where they could shove it in so many words. This is a family-friendly podcast, so I'm not going to say what Elon said. But he said that, and he pointed directly at Disney and these other big corporations and called them out. And the internet erupted with the conversation of, is there such a thing as corporate-sponsored journalism? If corporations are the primary funding source for a journalistic outlet, there can be no journalism. It's the job of journalists to scrutinize those in power. So you're looking at corporations, government, which is basically the same thing these days. If the corporations and the government are paying the bills at a newspaper that does journalism, no journalism can be done. And so it is our job as journalists to scrutinize those in power in the state of Alabama. And if we're taking money from these big corporations, we can't do that. We're not going to be incentivized to do that. So it's imperative that 1819 News stay free. And the only way we can stay free is if you guys support us. So please go to 1819news.com. Go up to the top. It says memberships or become a member. Click that button. Membership start as little as $5 a month. With that, you get some cool merch and access to behind-the-scenes content. We're going to be doing an overtime segment with Bradley Pierce talking about IVF, in vitro fertilization, the Supreme Court decision that was made, and some of the fallout, and how should we be looking at that lens, or what lens should we be looking through at this situation as it pertains to what is truly pro-life. So without further ado, though, we're going to welcome on our guest, Mr. Bradley Pierce. Bradley, thank you so much for your time and joining us.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yep. I'm really excited. I was hoping to possibly meet you in person or something before, but we get to digital meet here, to video meet, right, on the podcast.
It still counts.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's 2020, whatever it is, a 3-4. I can't keep track. Everything's a blur. where we e-meet. So, you know, I'm excited. We have a lot of overlap in our circles of people that we know really all over the country. I knew of you from Heritage Defense through a good brother of mine in Montgomery. And then I also saw your name pop up as it pertains to some of this personhood, equal protection, abolition, whatever, you know, is the author of a lot of this legislation. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And so I wanted to bring you on because I think that there's a lot of straw man arguments happening as it pertains to personhood and equal protection. There's a lot of myths. There's a lot of just nonsense that surrounds it. And when you get right down to it, when you look at your guys' argument right from the scriptures and even common sense, it really is the only option, but it's so shrouded in call it propaganda, call it, you know, myths, whatever, that it's important to me to bring on someone who's very well versed in this to just lay it out and say, quite simply, this is all we're saying. This is all we're trying to accomplish. Let's take a look at this. Let's dispel some of the myths. So I'm excited to do that. But one of the things we like to do on our show is we like to hear a little bit of people's stories, just because that often lines up with why they do what they do. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were born, your parents, and how you got into using law for the kingdom.
Yeah. Well, I was born in the Houston, Texas area. I've been a Texas guy, Texas boy, my whole life. And now live a little bit north of Austin, Texas. And born into a Christian home, grateful for Christian parents. I was actually homeschooled for most of my upbringing. And then went to college and law school at Baylor, up the road in Waco. And, you know, I mean, I wanted to go into the area of law. I felt like it was a call from God. I'm not saying like some supernatural voice or anything, but it certainly seemed like the opportunities and the need and a lot of the encouragement I was getting from people was directing me this way. And I definitely saw a huge need for Christians to be in the legal arena, serving people in just very mundane ways, but also, you know, ready to fight, to defend in the courts, whenever that becomes necessary. So that's kind of why I got into law. And that's what I've, by the grace of God, gotten to do more and more of. There's more and more fights to be had these days than there have been for a long time. And, so I'm grateful to do that on the parental rights front, and then also on the front to abolish abortion. You know, as I obviously love children, because my wife and I have 11 children of our own, and we definitely, and that's not counting, we've even lost 4 to miscarriage. But we love children, and that's really what motivates me to fight for life for everybody, every human being from the moment of fertilization. I believe is made in the image of God. And he's knitting them together, and it's murder and it's abomination to God for us to go in and to destroy their lives. And so that's why I guess that's what motivates me.
Sure. Well, before we jump into talk a little bit about Heritage Defense, how you got into that. What do you guys do there?
Yeah. So Heritage Defense, we started in 2010 to defend the parental rights of Christian homeschooling families. We just saw that there were lots of families that had, you know, were getting investigated by social services, not because they're homeschoolers, you know, but most people or not most people, but the data shows that about 37% of children in the U.S. will be part of a CPS investigation by the time they turn 18. It's a little over 4% of children every year. So there's lots of families that are being investigated by Child Protective Services, and over 90% of reports made to Child Protective Services are ultimately determined to be unfounded,
yeah.
Which means that there's lots of innocent families that are being investigated. And, you know, having a social worker knock at your door can be a pretty traumatic thing for most families, and being alone going through that, not having an attorney, can make it really difficult, and things can get out of bounds very quickly. So we started this organization so that way families have somebody to call immediately. They can just say, excuse me 1 minute while I get my attorney on the phone. They can call us 24/7 and we can be there for them, and it doesn't cost them anything else. It's just part of their membership with our nonprofit Heritage Defense.
Awesome. Yeah. And again, the Dawsons are members. We use that service. And if you homeschool, go sign up. It's definitely worth it. So parental rights is a huge conversation. And I think it's really, really both of the areas you work in, I think, are going to be the pivotal things that people look back on in 50 years, 100 years and say, what was going on? I think COVID will be another one. But that's a whole nother topic for another day. But, these big issues of parental rights, and then specifically, you know, Roe v. Wade being overturned, that happened, right? I never thought that was going to happen. Right. I was loosely aware of the personhood movement. I'd heard Jeff Durbin make some arguments. I've seen some of the guys that are kind of boots on the ground, at the abortion clinics, and they develop a bad reputation because they're a little bit more forceful than maybe some of the other people that are like, Jesus loves you, don't, keep your babies, versus the, hey, don't murder your baby. And there's just these kind of slight nuance differences or whatever. But I never really dove into the actual material, and meat of the argument. And I was just so excited to see that Roe v. Wade got overturned last year. We had people from our church come over and we feasted and we sang psalms and we sang hymns and celebrated and was just really excited about that. And then this guy, Ernie Yarborough, dropped a Equal Protection Act. Well, I forget the name of the bill. It may have been the Equal Protection Act. Can't remember. And I was like, okay, well, this is good. This will at least keep, the pro-choice people on their heels rather than on their toes. But I didn't think, this is never going to pass. This is crazy, da, 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 da. And then obviously the first thing is like, so you want to punish the woman or whatever. And it's like, no, that's not where the argument begins. Is it life? And if it's life, does it deserve equal protection under the law? And so Jeff Durbin came out and spent some time at the State House. Jeff Durbin's a pastor in Arizona that's very involved in this movement as well. And we had him come to our church. It was like on a whim. Someone reached out and they're like, hey, can Jeff Durbin speak at your church? I'm like, yeah, we don't even have to pay. This is great. And he came and I just watched him unpack the argument, and I was just cut. And I'm like, this makes more sense than anything I've ever heard in my life. And so you also being a huge person in this movement, I wanted to bring you on to kind of lay out the argument for equal protection. And then again, we're going to dispel some of the myths and talk about some of the institutional pro-life groups that are fighting against it and what they're doing.
Yeah. So maybe I'll start here. I was in Alabama. I was in Montgomery last summer and had lunch with a friend of mine, and he brought along a friend of his while we were there, who's an attorney, or actually is in law school, I believe, in Alabama. And the friend who's in law school, who I'd never met before, he asked me, oh, well, what do you do? And I explained to him, here's what I do: Foundation to Abolish Abortion. I'm an abolitionist. We want equal protection. We want the same laws to protect people before they're born, protect people after they're born, to protect people before they're born. And I kind of explained all that to him. And then he said, why are you in Alabama, though? I mean, we've ended abortion here, right? It's already illegal in Alabama. Since Roe versus Wade, now it's illegal here. So we don't have to worry about that, right? And I told him, actually not. Unfortunately not. So right now, the laws of Alabama do prohibit Planned Parenthood, right? They close abortion clinics, but they do not actually abolish or outlaw abortion. They don't provide equal protection. So there's estimates today that there's between 2022, July 2022, right after Dobbs, to July 2023 of last year, around 3,668 abortions still took place on Alabama soil, 100% legal.
Yeah.
100% legal under Alabama law. And that's compared to, there were 6,009 or so in 2019. So, you know, so yes, it looks like abortion numbers, at least on Alabama soil, have gone down some, although a lot of those are just going to other states. But the majority of abortions that were happening are still happening, and they're still happening on Alabama soil, and Alabama law still allows for that. And the reason why is because Alabama law does not provide equal protection. It doesn't call it, it's not homicide. It doesn't provide equal protection. It still says, it says, yes, abortion is prohibited for everyone except for the mother. And so what's happening is that because the pro-life bill has created this right to an abortion for the mother in the state of Alabama, and so mothers are, it's not illegal for them to order pills or to possess the pills or to take the pills to kill their children, their preborn children in Alabama, and they're doing it by the thousands. So that's why there's still a great need for this in the state. You know, even though a lot of people think it's already a lot of people say it's abortion free, but it's really not.
No, and I mean, I've even had the attorney general on, and you know, very shortly after Roe v. Wade was overturned, and he said, you know, now you know, it went from the abortion mill kind of being the scary place, and now it's the mailbox, you know, like where this is taking place, and so it seems like what you know, and again, I'll just say it: praise God, Roe v. Wade was overturned. Praise God, we have some of the strictest, if not the strictest, you know, pro-life legislation in the state. And it's okay to say that, yes, these are good. These are good things. It was a, you know, it's better than it's ever been, but we can't take our foot off the gas. What we need is righteousness and justice. And that's what we need to seek as Christians, is truth, righteousness, justice. And it sounds like what we're basically saying is, okay, if you are a doctor or a practitioner of some sort, you are not allowed to kill babies. Because we're saying to kill a baby in the womb is killing a person if you're a doctor or a practitioner of some sort. However, if you're a mom and you decide to kill your baby, it's all good. Is that right?
Unfortunately, yes. Okay. Yeah, that's right. And that's a lot of people, and that's not even something that was written in by, you know, like pro-choice Democrats. That's something that's written in by the actual pro-life leaders in the state.
Yep. I think the hump that people can't get over is that a woman should be held responsible for murdering her child. And it's, and again, I think it's just because this is the way we've always thought. This is the water we've always swam in. Women are the second victim of abortion. That's all we've ever known. That's all we've ever thought about. And you and I may differ on this. I believe, you know, in a homicide situation, there's this, I think, you know, the, you know, premeditation, mens rea, what was the intent? What are we doing here? There's a 14-year-old girl that can be taken into, you know, a Planned Parenthood by her pimp or by whatever, and she doesn't have the cognitive essence to know necessarily what she's doing. She's being coerced or whatever. That's not the same thing. On the other end of the continuum is these girls doing these TikTok videos talking about how much they loved killing the child that was inside of them, right? So there's this whole continuum, and we need to be able to figure out, you know, where each of these, you know, when the loss of life takes place, where is this on this continuum? And until there's actual accountability for women who are intentionally and knowingly killing their unborn child, and there's no accountability, it's gonna continue to happen. But again, this is hard when it hits people's ears for the first time.
Right.
This is, I understand there's gonna be people who are like, I can't believe Brian's saying this. And it's like, look, I get it. I was there like a year or two ago. But the more that I just looked at it, the more I realized, look, this is never going to end until the person who's responsible for killing the child is whether it's a doctor or it's the mother or whoever it is, whoever's making that decision. There has to be accountability.
Well, yeah, let me talk about that. There's a lot to unpack there. You know, I mean, a lot of times we talk about, you know, well, this, it needs to be criminal for the woman. And it's not because we're really singling out the mother. We believe that anybody who's involved with it needs to be, you know, the law needs to apply to them just like it applies to everybody else. But so we're not singling out moms. The bill there in Alabama and in every other state doesn't single out women, doesn't single out the mothers. It applies equally to everybody, you know. And so, but the reason we often talk about mothers is because the pro-life bills single out the mom, right? Yeah. They're the ones that single out the mom to create, you know, special rights to commit homicide, you know, of preborn children. You know, you already have laws in the state that make it illegal, if a man murders a woman, or even if a woman murders a woman who's pregnant, right? It's a double homicide already in the state. So it's already homicide to kill a preborn child, except for the mother. And then we create this special class. You know, the purpose of the law is there's kind of three main reasons for law, especially criminal law. You know, number one is to teach people, in this case, teach them the value of life, when life begins, and then how heinous the crime of murder is. The second purpose of the law, if someone's not going to be taught, if they're not going to agree with all that, then the second purpose of the law is to deter them, you know, to create a fear of the consequences of the law, that, hey, if you don't agree that this is life begins and this is how valuable it is and this is how bad murder is, then we want to deter you by creating severe penalties for taking innocent human life. And then if someone still will not be deterred by that, then the third purpose of the law is to provide justice, which then the justice then also has the same effect of teaching and then deterring. So it's not we don't want to put people in prison or anything else. We want the law to teach people, here's when life begins, here's how much it's valuable, just as much as your life, born person. And so we should be protecting them with the same laws. And then we want women to be deterred from aborting their children.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, there's so many of abolitionist women that talk to us and say, you know, one reason I'm an abolitionist is because I wish it, you know, that they, many of them have aborted their own children. They're post-abortive women. And they say, I wish it had been a crime because then I never would have done it. Mm. And then I would have my baby right now. And that's what we want. That's what we want to hear. One other thing on this, a lot of people don't realize that when you leave it legal for the mother to commit the abortion, you also allow it to be legal for a man or anybody else to pressure her into that abortion.
Yeah.
Right. It's illegal to force her. It's already illegal under Alabama law to force her into it, like putting a gun to her head and making her. But it's not illegal to pressure her into the abortion because it's not illegal to pressure someone to do something that's legal for them to do.
Yeah. I do think that that's an important point as far as what is the purpose of the law, you know, in a just society is a big key thing. And we're obviously, you know, used to be one. Now we're not so much one, but in a just society, the law is pedagogical in the sense. And what that means is that it teaches. The word of God says that the law is a schoolmaster. And so it teaches. And so, in the home, the father with the word of God teaches his family what's right and what's wrong, what's up and what's down. Orients those in his sphere of influence, his sphere of authority of what's right and wrong by the word of God. The church has its own, and the pastor and the elders, say what is right and what is wrong by the word of God, and they orient the sheep in that church. And then the state also has a responsibility through the civil law to say what is right and wrong. And then people are like, well, we shouldn't legislate morality. Okay, so murder should be legal? Like, let's just normal homicide. Well, no, that's obviously we can't have that. Well, okay, so now you're legislating morality. All legislation is legislating morality somehow. And so what we're basically doing is the state is saying it is okay to kill your child. That's what they're saying. When it's not illegal for the mother to kill their child, the state is actually saying, yeah, no, it's okay. You can do that. That's fine. It's doing that pedagogically. And what that means is that it's just being taught. That is what it is. And so by the state saying, hey, actually, no, this is bad, so we're not going to let you. The state is saying it's bad. And then, like you said, it has that deterrent effect. And so I think one of the big myths that, you know, usually rises up as soon as you start talking about this is they say, oh, so you want to go back and arrest everyone who's ever had an abortion? We'll get to that. Right. But I would honestly, I would, just like you said, the post-abortive women that said, I wish it would have been illegal because I never would have done it. I bet if you passed an Equal Protection Act in Alabama, one two, three, four, five, somewhere in that number, would get arrested. They would test the boundaries. If that law was enforced, pretty soon people would just stop killing their children because they're like, okay, this isn't worth it. I'm just gonna have to figure something out. I'm gonna have to put my kid up for adoption. I'm gonna have to figure out how to be a mom. I'm gonna have to, you know, get married. I'm gonna have to raise this child. All of a sudden, it's not an option. It's like divorce. When divorce is an option on the table, people pick it, right?
Right.
Divorce should never be an option in a marriage. It should never even be an option. And so if killing your child is an option, it will get viable when you're scared. And so it has to be taking off the table. So, but let's talk about, you know, that big myth of, so you're going to retroactively, and you're just, everyone who's ever had an abortion, you're going to lock them up in prison. Is that what you want to do, Bradley?
The people who use that, I mean, it's ridiculous, right? There's the people who say that know exactly what they're talking about, and they're just lying.
Yeah.
Both most of the time, they're fear mongering and they're trying to whip up fear. So that's called a retroactive law, right? Where you actually, something's legal now, but you make it illegal, and then you try to go back and go after the people who did it even when it was legal. You can't do that. It's unconstitutional under the U.S. Constitution, under the Alabama Constitution, and our bill explicitly prohibits that. So that's a ridiculous argument that people make on that. And then getting back to the one you were talking about earlier, like, you know, thinking about, well, what about the 14-year-old, you know, who's trafficked and has a pimp and all of that? You know, this is why we have a justice system, right? This is why we have, you know, law enforcement and prosecutors and grand juries and judges and juries and appellate courts and even the governor who can pardon people. This is why we didn't have this entire justice system, is to examine each case on a case by case basis and find out what exactly is going on here. A case like you're talking about, you know, like you brought up, you know, that people again may try to throw out fear mongering. Oh, what about the 14-year-old? That's never going to see a courtroom.
Yeah.
You know, that's never going to get prosecuted, because that's going to get weeded out. It's going to be the cases where people are shouting their abortions, you know, making abortion, you know, abortion parties and, you know, doing satanic abortion rituals. That's the cases that there's unfortunately more and more of, where it's clear intent, premeditation, knowing what they're doing, you know, causing the death of their child, with clear intent.
Trying to think of some of the other myths. You know, another real big myth that I always hear, and I get this one, I'm a staunch conservative Christian. I am not a libertarian. However, I do have a libertarian streak when it comes to parking tickets, and other things. Government overreach. Is if my wife has a miscarriage, the cops are going to kick in my door and drag my wife out and arrest her. Now, I'm being hyperbolic on that example, but they'll say, okay, right, well, when you have a miscarriage, you're going to have to prove that you didn't kill your child. That's the thing. You're going to have to prove to law enforcement. So here you are, Christian home, limited government family, doesn't want people interfering. Heck, I even have Heritage Defense on speed dial. I'm that kind of family. My wife has a miscarriage. Now I'm going to have to go explain to law enforcement that it was a miscarriage and that she didn't do that with a clothes hanger or something.
Right. Yeah. Again, another myth. I mean, first of all, the Alabama bill, that, you know, explicitly says doesn't apply to miscarriage. So it already covers that. Then on top of that, you know, in our country, thankfully we have a system that you're presumed innocent until proven guilty, you know, by beyond a reasonable doubt, before a jury of your peers. And so that's a pretty high burden. But even before we get there, like you're saying, is everybody who has a miscarriage going to be investigated? Well, first of all, the bill prohibits that. But secondly, in order to even get access to, you know, because people say like, oh, they're going to get access to, you know, a woman's period tracking app or something like that. You have to have a warrant that is issued by a judge who has examined the case, you know, examined the evidence that law enforcement brings them and determined that there's probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. In order to investigate in the first place, you have to have a report and reasonable suspicion to believe a crime is committed.
Sure.
So the idea that everyone's going to start getting investigated just because they have a miscarriage, again, is it's a ridiculous, you know, fear-mongering tactic.
And I think the fear-mongering tactic lies heavier on the first myth than the second. I do think that there are people who are like, well, I mean, my goodness, that would be terrible. What if, you know, I think that one's a little bit more of a legitimate fear. You know, the first one, the retroactive, we're going to lock everybody up, you know, like that one is pure fear mongering. I do think there's people out there that are like, well, you know, because what happens is like, there's a lot of people who are being in, like trying to do good intentionally with legislation. And there's some loophole that they didn't check that box, and that box ends up being Pandora's box, and it opens up something, you know. So that's what they would be afraid of is, hey, if we pass this, would this then open it up to where law enforcement could come and, you know, dig through our, you know, our bathroom or, you know, whatever, our house, to prove this. So I understand that fear, but at the same time, on its face, if you really look at it, okay, no, that's not a case. What are some of the other myths that you hear pushing back against this?
You know, again, some stuff people are like, well, what about a woman in a medical emergency, you know, to save her life, a life of the mother, and our bill? You know, I would say that's not even an abortion situation, right? If an abortion is intentionally taking the life of somebody, then, you know, trying to save the life of the mother is not that at all. Yeah. You know, you're doing everything you can to save as many lives as you possibly can. And as long as you're doing that, then, you know, then, yeah, that's not abortion. And so the bill does say, you know, doctors can do what they need to do to save the life of the mother, you know, when there's no other choice, you know, when they've done everything they can to try to save both, the bill allows for that.
All right. And then this is what kind of did me in on, again, moving Brian's Overton window, on really looking at the argument that that your group is making and really, you know, giving an ear to you guys and willing to listen, and really just saying, wow, this makes a lot of sense, was when I heard about some of trying to figure out how to tee this up the best. I forget who said it, but they said every just cause eventually becomes a grift. And what that is so you go back to civil rights and everything. There was a time when civil rights was an actual good movement. They were doing good things. They were doing it for righteousness' sake. But then kind of after the cause was already accomplished, like the Jesse Jacksons and Al Sharpton stayed on to grift. And so I think what can happen with any well-intentioned movement, pro-life and some of these other movements, it gets to the point where there's a ton of money to be made in it. And then actually accomplishing the mission is a threat to revenue, which is a weird conflict of interest that purpose-driven nonprofits can run into. I would love nothing more than to have a just and righteous government that's doing things, and 1819 could just go away and we wouldn't need good journalism that investigates and holds people in the state accountable. I'd much rather go do something else. You know, that's probably not going to happen. I think we're getting better, you know, year over year. But the government will always need someone to keep an eye on it. The corporation will always need someone to scrutinize them. But in this pro-life space, if we actually abolished abortion, there might not be a need for some of these big lucrative organizations. And I have sensed that's some of their reason for killing some of this legislation and making some of the terrible arguments. What are some of the egregious things that these institutional pro-life organizations have done that you've seen?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know all of their hearts and, you know, why they're doing what they're doing. I like to think the best, and they think that what they're doing is you know, they have good motives behind it, even though they're doing bad things. But kind of on the bad things front, they are the ones, it's pro-life organizations, the lobbying organizations that are the ones that are killing bills of equal protection. We've had more than 35 bills, abolition bills of equal protection filed across the country in the last 8 years. Every single one of them has died, and they've been opposed by the pro-life organizations. You know, right there in Alabama, actually, we had a bill in Louisiana, 2022, that we got passed by the House committee, and then it was going to the Louisiana floor. And again, it would provide equal protection, right? Not really creating a new law, just saying, hey, the same laws that protect born people from homicide should protect preborn people from homicide. And 77 pro-life organizations came out, signed a letter, and it was put on the desk of every House member just hours before the vote, and killed that bill. And one of the people that signed that letter was Cheryl Lewis, the director of Alabama Citizens for Life. And so, again, I don't know her motives or anybody else's motives, but I do know that she's against equal protection. She she thinks that, that there should be an exception for mothers to, you know, have zero penalty, zero legal liability for, you know, even when they intentionally, knowingly, willfully cause the death of their children.
I spoke with a pretty major pro-life person in the state of Alabama last year as Ernie's bill launched, and, you know, talked to him, nice enough person. And he had two major objections to dismiss Ernie. And I think people are going to learn Ernie's not going anywhere. He's unbelievably intelligent, persistent, kind, persuasive, principled. I could go on and on. He has more energy than anyone I've ever met, and it takes a ton of energy to fight this fight, not just this fight, but all the fights that he finds himself involved in. And so, but the intent to dismiss Ernie was the truth came out. It just like, it just fell out of this person. Well, you know, I mean, if we get any more strict on pro-life, then Republicans are going to start losing elections. And I'm like, oh no, not that. Like, if right. if we actually protect children from being murdered, Republicans could lose elections. And that's, we can't have that. You saw that with some of these people. I think it was Ann Coulter that were calling on Ron DeSantis. Ron, the polling shows you can't sign that heartbeat bill, Ron. The polling. Right. Oh, polling. That's what, that's finger in the wind. Right. That's what decides what justice is. And God bless Ron DeSantis for going on ahead and doing that, because it was for in his situation for him and what his promises were, that was the right thing for him to do. And he didn't look at the polling. And that's the attitude that people are going to have. But that was the first argument is, well, if we did that, Republicans could start losing elections and we can't have that. And it's like, okay, well, maybe if we do what's right and what's just, God will grant us victory. And this is a Christian man I'm talking to. I'm not going to go have that conversation with a pagan, you know, activist or a pagan legislator. This is a Christian person, devout Christian person. How about we obey and watch God bless? This covenantal understanding that Christians have always had when it comes to laws and nations. And then the other one is he threw this kind of like think tank white paper at me about pregnancy centers. It says, see, look at this right here. It says right here that that the moms have no idea that they're pregnant or what's going on right here, that they shouldn't be held accountable because they don't know, they don't understand what's going on because it says it right here. And what it was is this pregnancy center. And again, this is where you really have to look at it. Is the girl on TikTok who's shouting her abortion and celebrating the murder of the child in her womb, did she go to a pregnancy center to seek Christian counseling? No, that's not the person who's showing up there. The person that shows up to the pregnancy center that they're basing their entire case off of is a girl who is scared, is in a crisis, and doesn't know what to do, and isn't thinking necessarily clearly and wants help. Those are the people that show up to pregnancy centers, and if that's all you're looking at, I can see how you'd be like, yeah, that would be, if this person in the heat of the moment was in a crisis and made a decision to do this, that could, you know, that changes things. But they're basing their entire argument off of that, and that's not the whole picture.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a classic, I mean, both parties do this, but I guess since I'm a Republican, I see it more in our party. And that is, you know, it's like, hey, don't do anything controversial, because then we may not be able to win the next election. We may not be able to get power. And it's like, okay, we win and we get power. Okay, well, don't do anything controversial or else we may lose power.
Yep.
It's like, wait a second. Why are we getting the power in the first place?
Yep.
It's so we can use it to do what's just and right. And if we're not doing it on this issue to protect innocent life, you know, to protect people from being murdered, the most innocent among us, which is the most fundamental God-given duty of civil government, What are we even doing here? Why do we even have a party? Why are we even trying to get power if we're not using it for the most fundamental God-given function of government?
Yeah, it's power, you know, for the sake of having it and then preserving it. It becomes self-protecting and self-preserving. And one of the things, I wrote an opinion piece that really lauded Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, and a gentleman who's our state auditor here named Andrew Sorrell. You may know him. He's another phenomenal stud in Alabama. And I compared him because he was the Ernie before Ernie. Okay. So he was a state rep, got elected. He voted against the budgets, like 104-1 against all the budgets. He was the one, you know, John the Baptist in the wilderness, you know, voice crying out for reason on these budgets that were record budget after record budget. Everywhere there was a conservative stand to be made, he made it. He was, you know, had basically like 100% on all of his conservative scorecards and all this other stuff. And he won a Democrat seat that he flipped Republican when he won. And so everyone's like, Andrew, you're going to have to be moderate because you won a Democrat seat. And he goes, no, I got elected saying I was going to be Yosemite Sam down there. And by golly, that's what I'm going to go do. And he did. And everyone said, you're never going to win reelection. Well, then he won a statewide office as state auditor. So no, he didn't win his state house. Instead, he went on to actually have statewide office now. You know, and so the point is the who are the people who are doing the best right now? Whether it's in country music or in sports or in anything, it's the people who are pushing the envelope towards tradition. But specifically in politics, it's the people using their power to do what is right. Consequences be darned. Okay. Those are the people who are skyrocketing and have the hearts of the people. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, like you said, God will bless it. If we do God's will, God's ways, God will bless it. Yeah. And the other thing we haven't even mentioned yet is that not only is this biblical to provide equal protection, and God actually forbids showing partiality, that is, deciding a case based upon who the parties are, but it's even constitutional, right? Yeah. The U.S. Constitution says no state shall deny to any person within the jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Yeah.
So right now, Alabama and every other state is denying the equal protection of the laws to preborn persons, right? Do we believe when it says persons there, it means all persons born or unborn? I mean, that's what the pro-life movement said for years. Well, we're not acting like it. You know, we're not actually putting that into law. We're saying it to raise money or get applause lines, but we're not actually putting that into practice.
Yep. Well, And another area that it applies to is that's really big here in Alabama as of late is this IVF conversation. And we're going to talk about that in the overtime segment today, guys. But this will pretty much wrap it up. Bradley, you have any last words for the audience here?
You know, I just think this comes with, I think we have to put aside our pragmatism and put aside our kind of predicting the future and thinking, okay, here's how I think what we can get from here to there. And we just need to do what God says. God says you shall not murder. God says, you know, that's a crime. God says that's why he, you know, created civil government. And that's what the Constitution requires. And so we just need to do it and trust God with consequences.
Amen. Bradley Pierce, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, if you're not a member, you are going to miss out on this amazing overtime segment we're about to have with Bradley. So go to 1819news.com, click the Become a Member button. Membership start as little as $5 a month, and you'll have access to that content. Until next time, put your trust in God and keep your powder dry.